Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. Yep, we changed the name, but not the format, nothing like that. Everything's going to stay the same and try to keep it as streamlined as possible, bring you the same type of content. I'm open for suggestions, so if anybody wants to send me, drop me a line. You know, most of these podcasts come about from questions that are generated by you. So please keep those questions coming, and we'll get them answered. The official changeover will be April 1st. Put that on your calendar, please, April 1st, because you may need to go in and resubscribe to the show depending on the platform that you're in. So keep that in mind. Interviews with the Hunting Masters, it's on that URL now. It's going to change over Days in the Wild, and there is a slight possibility that you may need to resubscribe. So, April 1st, keep that in mind. So, before we roll into this next episode, I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation and some of the things that we can be doing out there. A woman actually asked me today, she's on Instagram, she was like, how... You know, I'm not trying to be sly or try to be whatever. She said, I just want to know what it is you get out of hunting. Why do you hunt? Educating the non-hunting public about why you do what you do, the benefits of hunting, talk to them about the North American model of conservation and the Pittman-Robinson Act, all that stuff. Educate yourself first, you know, so you don't sound like a dum-dum like I do often. And really, you know, arm yourself with the tools to educate people on the benefits and what we do and why. Because I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they just automatically assume that their tax dollars is what funds, you know, their income tax or their property tax or whatever, they think it funds conservation, and it doesn't. So educate yourself, arm yourself with those, and be ready to, you know, educate the non-hunting public. And another thing I want you guys to go, if you're not already a member of, you know, Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, stuff like that, get involved. The Mule Deer Foundation is awesome. We just got back from the Hunt Expo. They do a lot of excellent stuff out there. Go to muledeer.org and become a member. If you're already a member, there's things on the website where you can look up and find other ways to get involved. If you're not a member, become a member. It's super easy. It's a tax write-off. It's helping the end goal. So get on their website, check out the Mule Deer Foundation, go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, all these organizations. Get involved as many as you possibly can. You know, I'm not saying if you can't afford it, we understand. Do what you can do. If you could put in some sweat equity, check on their websites and see if they have any programs for you to get involved. Thanks a lot, and let's roll into this next episode. Well, we're back at the Hunt Expo live, Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. We changed the name, Mark, just in case
really?
You didn't know.
You rebranded. All right.
Yeah, we're in the transition of changing the name over right now. Everything's going to stay the same. Doing all the, you know, all the same type of format. Everything's basically the same. I just changed the name, one, because Interviews with the Hunting Masters, I think, scares away a few people. They're like, oh, I'm not a hunting master. I don't know if I want to be on the podcast.
Yeah.
Or you know, the guys that are listening are like, oh, this guy thinks he's a hunting master or whatever. You
know, yeah, right.
That kind of stuff. But also because it's super long name, Interviews with the Hunting Masters, very hard to market. It's very hard to, like, you know, throw hashtags and all that other crap that, you know, we have to do nowadays to make things fly.
Days in the Wild, that's a really good.
Yeah, Days in the Wild.
Nice and quick.
So that was the name of my TV show.
Yeah.
So, and it's the name of my guiding service, my officer.
Oh,
my
yeah, that makes sense.
So I just figured keep it everything.
It just ties you all
same.
Together, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect,
yeah.
Man. Good for you.
So, just in case you don't recognize his voice, we have Mark Smith. Muley Slayer Mark. I don't know why I can ever say that.
That's a lot of M&S's in there.
That's a tongue twister for me.
Yeah.
Especially when I got gum in my mouth.
And so, yeah, and I've started motivational speaking also. So it's Muley Slayer Mark Smith Motivational Speaker. So just MS, man, all the way around.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. So that's good.
That's awesome. So last time I had you on the show, well, you know what? Before we jump into that, give us a little rundown about yourself real quick just in case.
All right, Mark.
People don't know who you are.
I'm Mark Smith. I really am just an Instagram guy. And my brand on there is Muley Slayer, and I'm Muley Slayer 1 if you're looking to follow me at Muley Slayer 1, the number 1. And I'm just a longtime mule deer fanatic. That's my number one hunting passion. And I've been an outdoor writer, and I've been on pro staffs, and I've been on teams and this, that, and the other. And right now I'm proudly a member of Team Weatherby. That's probably one of my greatest relationships is with Weatherby, mm-hmm. Adam Weatherby over at Weatherby Firearms, and then Badlands. Nice. I'm ops member over at Badlands. So those are my two biggest partners in the industry, Badlands Gear, Weatherby. And this is my 10th straight year of being a presenter here at the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo. I do every year I do seminars, on one on Friday, one on Saturday, how to mule deer hunting.
Right.
And over the 10 years, man, I've covered everything from archery techniques to high country backpack hunts to tracking in the desert, just every way that I can hunt mule deer. I come and give seminars on that, and I'm just a life member of the Mule Deer Foundation, a huge advocate of anything mule deer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we did a little partnership with MDF on this series that I'm doing here at the show. And
nice.
Yeah, we're really trying to get guys to go and be a part of it. Conservation that they do is incredible, and we support them, and we're happy that they support us. You know, MDF has been a long time supporter of me, so I can't say enough of what they do.
Right It's, and that's it's why incredible. We all grow up and get older and more responsible, right? It's way more or less about how to go kill a deer. It's all about what can we do to have deer to go hunt and enjoy and, you know, take photos of and just have a reason for being, right? And that's where I'm at. What I'm preaching the most these days is we need to pay attention, especially with the species, with mule deer, for sure. Join your chapters and just do everything you can for them if you love them, or, you know, you're just not going to have them. And that's just kind of what it's coming down to.
Well, and I feel like they're probably one of them. I mean, next to sheep and maybe goats, but they're the most fragile. They're definitely the most fragile of the common species of animal that gets hunted. You know, whitetail or shit. In Arizona, you know, I'm seeing coos deer in areas I never saw, you know, coos whitetail before.
That species is like, they can be an invasive species like hogs and coyotes. They're going to live anywhere, man, you know.
Well, I mean, if you look back east, I mean, whitetail will live underneath people's decks. You know, they adapt. You can't do that to a mule deer.
I mean,
some mule deer, you know, you'll see them in town or whatever, and you'll see those, you know, towny bucks that kind of learn how to, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not. They're easily stressed. That's why it's hard to get mule deer urine, like, to go buy it, because they can't keep, keep a healthy herd in captivity.
Right.
So, absolutely. And I'm not sure what it is about, you know, biologically or whatever that makes them that way.
Yeah, but you can't mess with them too much.
Yeah. So. Last time I had you on, we it was me, you, Charles, and Randy.
Yep.
Right?
Ulmer,
Yeah, Randy Ulmer was on, and we were talking about hunting with the stigma of hunting with a outfitter.
Yeah.
With an outfitter.
You'd posted a photo of an animal harvested, and the guide was in the photo, and someone said, that's not real hunting.
Right.
And that triggered a lot of us.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Now, both sides of the spectrum, you know, being a hunter, being an outfitter, and having done both, gone on outfitted hunts and gone on, plenty of DIY and taken plenty of guys, you know, it always irked me. And you hadn't really been on any.
Only one other one in my life, you know, a Western big game hunting.
Right.
You know, I did only my very first elk hunt ever in my life. I went guided. Actually, two. I'm sorry. The same outfitter. When I first moved out west, I didn't know anything, so I went with an outfitter for deer in the Gila, of all places.
Right.
And all he did, it was just a prelude to elk hunting. Like, I'm going to show this guy some forked horns from the road, but he's really going to see some 350 bulls. And so the next year, I hunted elk with him too. But and neither one of those hunts did I kill anything on the deer or the elk. I didn't even fire a shot. And but I learned. Wait a minute. This is public land. I can go buy me a tent and do this myself. And I did. I made a name for myself just doing that on public land by myself for 20 years.
Right.
And I think back to what we're saying is the conversation come up, and I think on that podcast, the one you were just mentioning, I said, hey, I'm not against it. I'm just a DIY guy, but if I ever draw the right tag, and I'm 50 this year. I'll be 50 on my birthday. And
you'll look a day older than 49.
Hey, thanks, man. I shaved that gray goat beard off. I'm starting a new job with a new company, and I figured I better clean up my look a little bit. And next week, actually, tomorrow, Monday. But anyway, back to the story. I wanted to hunt New Mexico. New Mexico is my favorite place to hunt. That's where I got my roots in mule deer hunting in the Four Corners area, and it's really hard to draw there for anybody. And I was like, man, I'm going to take a shot. I know a friend that's got an outfitting business. I'm going to get on an outfitted hunt just so I can get the tag. You know, I want to go hunt there. I haven't hunted with my rifle in New Mexico since 2008, and I've only ever had two drawn rifle tags in New Mexico in the whole 25 years I've been hunting mule deer.
Right.
And it's my favorite place to hunt them, so I want to hunt them again. So I went with Dead Right There Outfitters, Tim Bailey, and got in, and he applied for me, and I did secure the tag in a great unit. And because of their ability to go scout and find the animals and understand everything on day three, I killed a 194-inch buck, my best ever, public land. And, you know, I had to shoot it, and I had to do everything, but it's a five-day hunt.
Yeah.
And my time is worth more than my money at this age in my life, you know, and I'm like, I want to make the most of it. And I'm no less proud of that one than the 192 I killed the last time I had a New Mexico tag that I killed by myself. Right. I'm prouder of the second one. It's a little bigger.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's just ridiculous to think. You know, it's not ridiculous. It's just a matter of ignorance. And I don't mean it in a word of, that's not a slang term.
No.
Ignorance of understanding all of hunting. You need to understand all of hunting to understand where the guided and outfitted part comes in.
You know where I think the shade comes from, the shadows of the badness come from, is that you got places like Texas and, there's a lot of places, not just Texas, but Texas is very well known for having high fence.
Yeah.
So people think guided hunt, they automatically, like, I think that's where their head goes. It's like, it's a guarantee, you know?
Right.
It's not a guarantee.
No.
You still got to be, and I'll equate this to my own business in Arizona. I hunt all public land, when I hunt with clients. I can't tell you how many guys come, and I feel like they think they're going with an outfitter. It's a guarantee.
Right.
The only guarantee is I'm going to present an opportunity for you, and that's not even a guarantee.
Right. No.
But so far, knock on wood, we have 100%, shot
opportunity.
Shot opportunity. But even that's not a guarantee. But so I'm presenting as an outfitter. I'm presenting you with an opportunity. It's up to you. I mean. Listen, I have a lot of tricks that I could teach you while we're doing it. I could hold you by the hand, and still, it's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had a guy come in and unfortunately missed a few times. And this is, of course, by his account, I don't know him very well, but he's got experience shooting, and he knows how to shoot well. But you're in that situation, if you're not laser focused and haven't been there before.
Yep. It was a perfect example of the outfitter. My best friend, Jeremy Duggar, was on that hunt with me because he drew the tag too. And just we all just partied together. But I went with Tim. Uh-huh. And Jeremy was there. And he killed that 223 buck same day I killed mine. And he was just off by himself doing his thing and found that buck on his own and got it, the same unit. But his daughter had drawn the 2C January bow hunt, which is the hardest tag to draw on the planet for a bow hunter, for a mule deer. It's the hardest tag as anybody. There's only like 25 tags.
It's harder than the strip?
It's harder than anything because there's no point system. There's no, you just have to draw it. And so for an archery tag, I think it's the hardest tag in the world to get. It's a January hunt. And anyway, Jeremy is an excellent mule deer hunter. He taught me just about everything I know about mule deer hunting. And his daughter, Morgan, that works for him at his bow. He owns the bow shop, the expert archery shop there in Farmington, New Mexico.
Okay.
And Jeremy's the big muley guru, and he went out there, and he had his daughter, Morgan, and she's 20-something, set her own bow up, tuned it, everything, man. You know, she's a good shooter. And they went out, and they were finding bucks, but not getting on them. Well, a friend of theirs that outfits in that unit had clients in.
Okay.
And this outfitter, the point of this is the passion. Outfitters, they they're real hunters, and they are passionate, and they want to see stuff on the ground as bad as anybody.
Right.
Not from a monetary standpoint, but from a completion standpoint. Like, this is the process. The whole hunt's a process. And if you don't have a harvest at the end of the hunt, there, no matter how much you say, I loved the experience and all this, you close that last final gap with a kill, and it is completion to this thing. So it's for, you know, reputation, for money, for whatever, but for a personal standpoint, this outfitter needed that closure of a dead buck on the ground. I put in all these hours, all the sweat equity.
Right.
I want to walk up and do the old shoulder pat. I want to pat a buck on the shoulder and rub my hands on his antlers. I want that feel. He had clients that came in that could not hit the bucks. He had guys missing 200-inch plus bucks at 15 yards. I don't know how that happened.
It does, man. And, it happens.
And so finally, season's almost over. Morgan had not killed her deer, and this outfitter and Jeremy were on the phone. And he's like, man, bring Morgan over. I want to go hunt with you guys. I just need to see a dead deer. I need to see that. I want to feel that. I want to feel it, you know.
Right.
Feel it. And they went over, and she shot a 172-inch buck that day with her bow, public land.
Nice.
And there was closure. Was it guided, outfitted? They all know each other. They're all on the same land. There's an outfitter with them. And if he wants the picture for his website, Jeremy's like, I have no pride. I care less. You know what happened. I know what happened. Put the picture on there.
Right.
But we all went and killed this deer, and there was closure to the hunt, and everybody was happy. Yeah. That's what it's really all about, man, is that closure and that feeling of everybody was successful. The dad was successful. The daughter was successful.
Right.
The outfitter finally had some success, right?
Yep.
And there's all egos and pride away. Everybody had a good day that day.
Yeah. I was having this conversation with Doyle Moss the other day. And it's that stigma that's out there that got created by social media that it wasn't there before. I don't remember it being there. Like I used to remember when you would, even on TV, you guys were like really happy to say, oh wait, I was with an outfitter. This is the outfitter I was with, you know, whatever. And now it's just like, oh, if you're with an outfitter, you're not a real hunter. You don't, you know, it's like, there's so many guys that bash on other people for doing that, and it's bad. Sucks.
It does suck.
It sucks because
We'll just educate them one at a time on these podcasts, through TV, through magazine articles. We'll just keep. We're not going to change what we're doing.
No.
They're going to have to change the way they think. This is the way it's going to have to be.
Exactly.
And we have to do a good job of presenting it to them the right way.
Yeah.
Not calling them names. Not beating up on them.
Oh,
just saying, hey, look. You poor ignorant soul. This is what you don't understand. And what I have found is, you know what, real quick, this is a great time to bring this in, and I haven't told this story at the show yet, and I really wanted to. I was interviewing for a job. I'd built a branch for a company I was working for. Everything was going great, and all of a sudden they decided they didn't need regional directors anymore. And so on the January 7th, they walked in and say, hey, here's your severance, here's your bonus, we're going to let you go. And I'm like, hey. Things happen in the business world. And when you get upper executive positions, you have to expect that sometimes. Changes get made. And so I found myself for the first time in my entire life unemployed, and I was talking to a recruiter talking about starting another opportunity with a company. And this recruiter goes, well, tell me a little about yourself. And I started talking about myself a little bit. And then he's like, well, tell me about Mark. What are your passions? And I never try to mix my hunting life with my daytime job life because sometimes those can cloud each other.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm a hunter. And he's like, oh. And talking to him, he had an Oriental last name, so I could tell he wasn't a hunter. I could tell just from talking to him and because of his last name, I had a feeling this guy is probably not an outdoorsman or a hunter. And he said, yeah. He goes, well, have you ever hunted bears? And I said, I have hunted bears. Kodiak grizzly bears? I said, no, I've hunted black bears. He's like, oh. I said, are you a hunter? He goes, no, but I'm going to Alaska on a cruise this year, and I want to go see bears eat the salmon.
Right.
And I was like, all right. And I took the time. I said, hey, what is your opinion of hunters? He goes, I don't really know. I think I like the ones that do it, like, for meat. But, like, for the trophies and stuff, I don't really like that too much. I was like, man. Can I talk to you about that for a minute? So I became the recruiter, right?
Yeah.
And I turned the tables on this guy. And, man, we had the best 30-minute conversation about conservation, about Mule Deer Foundation, my association with him, DIY. He didn't know about the Pittman-Robertson Act.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't know
Nobody
about
does.
He didn't know about. And I was like, did you know if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have a grizzly bear to go see in Alaska?
Yeah.
Are you serious? And I told him all that, right? And he went and did his research.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a phone call from the next day. He's like, is you have enlightened me, man. You've changed my life. I actually want to go hunting. I'm like, well, I can help you with that.
That's awesome.
What I mean is that, like, I got goosebumps right now talking about it because I made a difference in somebody's life. And
that's
I made
huge.
A difference for what we love to do just because I asked the question, you know, what do you think? What do you think about hunters? Even knowing I might get mud on my face, you know, I might get mud pie thrown at me, but I just said, what do you think? And by being able to change his perception and understanding of what conservation goes hand in hand with hunting and what a true hunter and a true conservationist means to all wildlife.
Right.
He had no clue about any of that. He didn't know there was organizations for it, you know? And we talked about other conservation people that are wolf advocates and things like that. And I said, some of those people are the worst thing in the world for your grizzly bears.
Right.
And I explained that to him, too. And I'm not going to bash anybody, but he didn't know any of that. He researched that, where their money goes.
Yep.
And, man, it's just follow the money.
Litigating us.
Follow the money, man. You'll find out where everything goes. So that was a great experience, and I think that's the message for all hunters. We are all – if you've just bought your first rifle or your first bow and you're walking in the show today, just by buying that weapon, paying that taxation, and getting your hunting license, you're automatically an ambassador to our sport. And this is one of the only sports that you can be an ambassador for any level. In football, there's only how many guys per team, and they're the only ambassadors for that team. We're all a team of hunters, crossbows, compounds, recurves, rifles, muzzleloader, shotguns, Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, Sheep Society. We're all one team, and every single person that's a taxpayer and a license holder is an ambassador to that sport.
Exactly.
And take it upon yourself to go represent it the very best way you can. And we'll kill that stigma of those people that think we're all Bubbas, with the guns and the truck and the
Elmer Fudds.
Yes, yes.
it's a hard, it's so funny because every time I often go to, have little talks and stuff, and one of the last ones I was during a fitness thing, and I had a bunch of guys – mid-20s in the gym, and I asked a question. I said, let me ask you guys a question, because they knew I was a hunter and they knew I was a professional archer and all that other stuff, and they wanted to know how I translated into fitness and all that stuff. So we talked a lot about that, but then I asked the question. I said, so show me a show of hands, how many people know where the money comes from for conservation, for the fish and wildlife agencies, for all the, the stuff that happens that keeps animals on it. And everybody raised their hand, and everybody had the same answer. Taxes. Comes from the taxes. I said, do you know that your taxes don't go to any of this? Then I explained to him the Pittman Robinson Act. I explained to him all the, stuff that you just kind of went over. And they were like floored. They had no clue. And I had a similar reaction. A lot of them were like, maybe I want to look into that.
Yep.
I'm like, not a dollar of your money is going, unless you're going to buy some type of sporting good or, ammunition or whatever that is associated to, you are not,
unless you do it on purpose, you're not just doing it unless you do it on purpose.
Exactly.
That's the thing,
Exactly.
It's not coming out of your check every week.
Yeah. I really think it's important that, this was something I was pushing for a while, and, I got a lot of pushback on it, which I couldn't understand, but I think it's because people don't want it. Hunters don't want to create more competition, so they don't want to recruit people.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest opposition. But one of the things I was really pushing and driving home was, take the time, even if it's one person a year, to educate that person on why this is the way it is and, what the North American model of conservation is.
Right.
I was having a conversation with Nick Moulton from Oscut Broadheads. We were talking about it. He's from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, everywhere else in the world, North America has the best model, the best working system. He's like, we have a shitty, it's almost like a free for all down there.
Yeah.
So, and he's like, so many people, so many different countries, because he's, been traveling and hunting different things, they want to set it up like we have it, but it's like they're so entrenched into what they're doing that I don't know how easy that is for them to turn it around, but anyway.
No, there's a lot to be proud of in this country, man, these days, especially around the conservation the model of what we have here.
Absolutely. Sure. So, if you could share with us a really good story. I don't know if you want to share the full story of that buck too.
I want to share the story of Jeremy's buck, man, because it's it was amazing, man. You know, when you're a part of something and you're like, this is really special. This is going to last forever. This wasn't your Like every day you wake up, you're going to think about this for the rest of your life. That's kind of how Jeremy's hunt went down, man. So anyway, Jeremy, he draws the same tag that I went through Tim to get, and we're all and Jeremy, man, he likes to go find his own bucks. He doesn't want any intel. He just don't even come tell him about bucks you saw. Right. He just wants to go find his own bucks. Jeremy, being the professional he is, man, he's like, I'm going to go do something off the wall. I'm going to go find a giant nobody knows about. And he goes and he just looks on Google Earth and finds this isolated pond in the middle of Timbuktu. No, I'm talking a sea of sage for miles, you know, and then there's just rim rock around the edges of it. He goes down there a couple weeks before season in mid-October, and he puts a trail camera up on a pond. And then the Wednesday before, so the season opened on Saturday, he goes out Wednesday and pulls a trail camera. Mm-hmm. And there's one picture of this buck, and it's his neck and his head walking in the frame, and it's that 225 non-tip walking through the camera. He's like, that's him right there, man. So, and they'd already found some big typicals, and I didn't care. I didn't have any sweat equity in it, so I wasn't emotionally attached to any of the deer. I just wanted to shoot a big deer.
Right.
I'm big, mature buck's what I wanted. And so, opening day. So we all make a plan, and Jeremy, being the guy he is, when you have a best friend, it's like it's thicker than blood, man. It's just he's like, well, he goes, why don't you go take a crack at that buck opening morning, and I'll go look for this. We had another buck called Vanilla. It was a 200-inch net typical 4x4 giant. He's like, I'm going to go look for that buck, this Vanilla buck, and you go look for this big non-tip. Just see if you see him, whatever.
Right.
So I get in this rim rock opening morning glassing, and a little after daylight, this truck just comes cruising down this road. I didn't even know there was a road out in the sage flat. And there's this truck just comes cruising down to the pond. I'm about 3/4 of a mile from the pond on big swirls. Looking, not swirls, I'm a Vortex guy. What am I talking about? We had so many scopes on that hunt. But I had my Vortex up, my Kaibab 15x56. And I'm watching. So yeah. 15 power, 3/4 of a mile, still not great. But I could see, you know, I was looking for deer more than I was looking for a score of a deer, right? So this truck pulls up to this pond. And I'm looking at it through my glass, and I see a shimmer of something, like on this side of the pond in my glass. So the truck's up here in my glass, right?
Yeah.
And I see a shimmer, and I kind of focus. Oh my gosh, that buck, that non-typical buck, is standing out there in the sagebrush. The way this road comes up to the pond, you come uphill in a real quiet truck, I guess. He's rolled up on the pond. The buck's busted broad daylight, man, opening morning, 200 yards from this truck, standing out in the sagebrush. I'm like, yeah, I don't even believe this is going to happen. I'm going to watch a road hunter smoke. I mean, I'm expecting a 7 mag to be stuck out the window and blast him any second, right? I'm like, golly, man, at least I'm going to get to see it, and I'll go over and look at the deer, right? And the truck kind of turns around, and once the deer realized that they weren't, like, onto him, mm-hmm. Deer are so super smart, dude.
Yeah.
That deer puts his head down like the height of his withers,
right,
and starts tippy-toeing. I mean, walking as slow as he possibly can. About every 5 feet, he just stop and do this, man. Like sneakily look over his rump, like I'm getting out of here. And he just walk a little bit more, stop, and he'd look back and walk a little more. And then all of a sudden, poof, he's gone, man. Like he disappeared into the thin air in grass, 2 inches tall. I'm like, where did that deer go, man? And why didn't they shoot it? And they drive off. And then I get to looking, and where that deer disappeared, there's a little sagebrush right there. Just one little bush kind of by itself. And I really started focusing. There was an arroyo right there, about 10 feet wide, about 10 feet deep.
Yep.
He walked over to that thing and just almost plopped in it. And then they can travel miles either way they want in those arroyos, and they do. That's something I learned on this hunt. Those bucks travel those things like highways.
Oh, yeah.
There could be a buck in arroyo broad daylight walking. You'd never see him out in the desert.
I see it all the time in Arizona.
He's just right. And so he went up that arroyo, and I went down. I went ahead and finished out the morning there, and there was no way to make a move on that. And I'm like, I don't know which way he went. You know how I am from just talking to you over the years. I'm a back out kind of guy, and just regroup, figure this out. A lot of people are like, why didn't you just run straight there and shoot him right then? Well, I don't know which way he went, and I just don't want to bump him, you know. A deer like that's not going to put up with too much.
No.
It was like 7-8-year-old deer, you know. He's old deer. And so I started back down toward my truck, and when I got there, that white truck was parked on the road. And I walked up, there's a guy just sitting there on his phone. And I walked up to it, and I was like, you know, Flores, I'm just going to – I don't want to bother the guy. I'll just walk on. But then there's no way I can't ask him about what he saw at that pond, right? Because there's no way they didn't shoot that buck. I don't care how good of a hunter you are. You're going to shoot that buck on public land, you know.
Oh, yeah.
When you're looking at that deer, proportionately, the antlers on top of that deer's head was dimensionally the same width, height, and length of his body. You know, when you have the body of a deer, and you see that much – it's almost like his whole body was on top of his head.
Right.
That's how I judged him, you know. I'm like, God – that's as big as his body, you know. And so I knew it was a big deer. Well, I talked to that guy, and he said, yeah, my son's got a tag. He's up on top of this bluff where I had just come off of, glassing that deer. And I said, hey, did y'all see anything at that pond? And he's like, no. He goes, "You see us over there?" I said, "Yeah, I saw you." And I'm super being cautious, like, not right. to give nothing. I'm like, "Do you see any deer over there?" Like, no deer at that pond whatsoever. Nuh-uh. And then he kind of read into my eyes, right? He's like, "Why? Was there a deer over there?" I was like, "Yeah, there was a buck over there. Was it a big one?" I was like, "I don't know. I was looking through the glass, but I could tell it had antlers, and I didn't know if y'all were meat hunters or what. I just kind of expected to watch y'all shoot that deer from the road right there, because he's right by the pond." He goes, "No, man, we rolled up and had this. My son put the spotter on the window and was looking at the rim rock in the background for the deer. So looked right over the top of him, man. They could have killed him easy at 200 yards, opening morning, 225 buck. But they looked right over him. And then I went back over there later that day, like, how that even happened?
Yeah.
Well, there's some cedar trees. Here's the pond, right? There's some cedars right by the road. Yeah. They pulled right here.
Uh-huh.
The deer was right here. They just couldn't have seen him right there anyway, the way it was. So we're on a podcast, and I'm pointing at the table.
Yeah, it's
but
all right.
They can't see the deer. So I go back and talk to Jeremy and Tim, and I'm like, "Hey, these guys were over there, and this is what I saw." And they're like, "Dude, that they know this guy." They're like, "Dude, this guy's hardcore. They are get after it, dudes. They're as good as we are. We got to get that buck." And they're not. If they're onto that buck, they're not going to leave. They're going to be on it. And I'm like, "Man, well, I'm not going to just go tits up on this deal, man. This is we found this buck, but we're going to hunt him too, right?"
Yeah.
So that afternoon, we run into him again. And the guy's wife's, and there's the dad, the son, which is a grown man, and his wife, that young man's wife, is in the back seat.
Right.
And I just start kind of filling them out. We're talking, and I was like, I said, "Have y'all seen a big buck over here? I mean, I'm just going to be blunt with you. Are you over here because you're onto a big buck? Because I kind of want to stay out of your way." And she's like, "Yeah." And so she says, "Well, yeah, right here, right by where your truck's parked." And I'm like, "Well, you saw a big buck right there by that truck?" And you can just see the dad, like, looking at the sun, like, "Tell her to shut up right now." And she goes, "Yeah, it was a really big 4-point. And the son goes, "I don't know how big it was. You know, when we turned around and went back, there was just a little 3-point standing there." They had seen the big typical that Jeremy was over there looking for, the vanilla buck, but they don't know about the non-typical. Yeah. So I was like, "All right." I said, "Well, I'm going to shoot it straight with you guys. We're on to a huge buck. And Jeremy Duggar found him right over there by where y'all were at. And you're going to get sick of seeing us because we're not going anywhere else. We're not going anywhere else in the unit. We're not looking for another deer. We don't care about any other deer on this whole hunt or this whole unit. We're going to stay right here so we can hunt on top of each other or not. But I'm just letting you know that I'm not caving. I'm not moving on." They're like, "Oh, no problem, man. No problem. We'll just kind of stay back over here." And they did that, man. It was just a conversation. I wasn't being an a-hole, but I was kind of sticking to my guns, like, you know, it's public land. You can do what you want, but I want to give you fair warning. We're not leaving this 2-mile square.
Right.
We're going to be right here. So I went back and told Jeremy that, and they're like, "Man, I can't believe you told them that." "I'm glad you did, but I can't believe you did that." I'm like, "Why wouldn't I? They would have told me. I feel like they would have been that way with me because they're onto that big typical. So there's room for everybody, and there's plenty of bucks for everybody, but we're going to go after our buck." So we named that buck the Fonz, man. He was so cool. And being a 70s kid, I came back. I was like, "Man, that buck. He put his head down, kind of flipped his collar, just popped in at Arroyo. Didn't like a younger buck would have ran off and drawn attention to himself. This buck knew it. I'm not even moving. I'm just going to slip off." And I was like, "Things like the Fonz." And Jeremy goes, "That's his name, the Fonz." So, anyway, we named that deer the Fonz. And on one of the pictures I posted on Instagram, I hashtagged the Fonz on it.
Yeah.
One of the old actors from Happy Days,
no shit,
the Fonz's girlfriend on one of the episodes, liked my post. I'm sure she's California liberal. I had no idea what she's liking, right? I see this lady like my post, and I go look her up. She was Henry Winkler's girlfriend as the Fonz on Happy Days in the 70s, and she's liking my post about killing deer. It was hilarious.
So
just because I put hashtag the Fonz, right? We go back, and we're like, "Hey, we need to get this deer on the ground. Let's put all of our energy and our efforts into it. Let's not leave one bush unturned." So we looked at Google Earth. We looked at the pond and just put a mile and a half square around that pond. Said, "Let's go push every knob. Let's go do – it's a 5-day hunt.
Yeah.
We're already 2 days in on this thing. Let's just go make him move and see him and shoot him. Let's just go get him." So we did, man, and we put on miles and miles and miles on Sunday. It was the second day of the hunt. And – we kept narrowing our margins by every unsuccessful push or glassing point or every little thing we did that was unsuccessful. And this is, the deer are sparse. Like, we didn't even see another deer. So on the day we shoot a 225 and we cover miles and miles and miles, we only seen one deer, and it was that deer. That's just how.
Isn't that crazy how it is? Like, those areas that don't hold a lot of deer.
You hear the old guys say, "You ain't going to see many, but when you do, it's a big one." Well, that's exactly where we were at. And So we start narrowing our margins down to this last spot, and me and Jeremy kind of look at each other like, this is going to be it right here, man. Yeah. We're fixing this. We're going to at least see this deer right now. And we told Tim, look, I'm going to set guard over here. Jeremy's going to set guard over here. We're both shooting 257 Weatherbys. I can shoot 500 yards this way. He can shoot 500 yards that way. And we both shoot up to the hill. And so Tim puts on his vest, his orange vest, his orange hat, and he takes off. And we watch him for an hour zigzag this 50-acre knob. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Over. And we told him, don't just walk in a general area. Those bucks like that will lay until you're on top of them. Don't stop until you have physically looked under every bush on that hill. He's like, golly, man. I was like, hey, you're just going to earn your pay today, man. Go walk that hill, boy. And so Tim's awesome, man. He's just such an incredible human being. And he went up there and he walked that whole thing. And I'm telling you, the last bush he checked, and it was right in front of me, man, 300 yards. That deer was laying 300 yards from me almost in plain view, and I never saw it.
Oh, shit.
And I'm glassing. You know, I got my gun up, and I'm waiting for a deer to move, come off that. All of a sudden, Tim bumps him in big buck fashion. He's like, I'm not going to run across that sage flat where Mark's sitting over there with a rifle, and I'm not going to cross the sage flat over there where Jeremy's with a rifle. I've done this before. I've seen bucks get mowed down doing this. I'm not doing that. I'm going to go exactly where the danger came from.
Yeah.
Because the danger's already come from there, right?
Right.
So Tim comes off the top down, bumps him. Buck J-hooks like this, goes right back over, and Tim didn't see him. He's heard him. Heard the rock, the pea gravel, and the buck bouncing, starting away. And so I don't know any of this is going on. I just see Tim stop and then turn and kind of walk that way about that time. But boom, our Jeremy's rifle go off. So I get over where I can see Jeremy, and I'm watching, and Jeremy's on a shooting sticks. I got my glasses up, and Jeremy's on a shooting sticks. For 3 minutes, Jeremy never got off a shooting sticks. I'm like, man, he did shoot. He did shoot something. So... And Jeremy's not the kind of guy that's going to shoot bobcats and coyotes on a deer drive. He's either big buck or nothing, right?
Right.
So I go walking over there, and he's probably 400 yards from me, actually. So I walk over there, and by now he's got his glasses up on his shooting sticks, just looking. And Jeremy won't – he's laser-focused the last place he saw the deer, right? So I'm like, what are we looking at? He said, big buck. I said, you see him? He goes, no. I said, you shot him? Yep. Was it the one? I don't know. It's just big. He sounded irritated. I don't know. It's big. I was like, okay. What do I need to look at? Pine tree on the top of the hill to the farthest one to the right. I shot him going behind it. He kind of flopped. And I'm like, Jeremy, are you talking about that last tree on the ridge? He goes, yeah. I said, what was he doing? He goes, he was flying, dude, running across the top of that thing. I said, Jeremy, that's 498 yards. He goes, yeah, I know. It's far, but I shot him. I was like, man, Jeremy's got a custom rifle with a 27.5-inch barrel on it, and he shoots 100 grain barns out of that 257 at 4,000 feet per second. It's a 500-yard point-on gun, right? He can just put it on hair, and it's going to hit the deer. So, and I never questioned his shooting. The deer was quartering away when he shot, so he put it right in the middle of him and shot. But he hit him, and the deer fell, but he got back up. So we went over there, and turns out the bullet had gone just under the deer and broke his left leg at the knee joint on the left side. And the deer immediately bedded down. So I said, well, we're hunting with guns. Normally we're bow hunting. We got guns. Let's go get this joker, man.
Right.
So I go around, and Jeremy goes straight to blood, and I'm trying to find a vantage point. That deer had not gone 50 yards over that hill and laid down, and I walked right up on him because I thought the deer would have been further down.
Yeah.
I walked right up on him. And it's incredible to see a 9x7, 30-something wide, beer can bases, 225, gross, non-typical, just laying there looking at you at 20 yards. When you almost step on a snake and that feeling you get, when I walked, I saw that deer, man, I went. And he jumps up and he runs off, and I go back to Jeremy, and so we slow way down, and now we've just bumped him, now screwed up or whatever. So we left him and just said, it's getting dark, let's just not go down there no more.
Yeah.
Let's just go tomorrow and find him in the morning. So I went on, because of this other buck that they had intel on right out of our camp, I was like, I'll just go hunt him in the morning. And our other friend, Wesley Warner, shot a 185 buck that evening that Jeremy shot his buck. And said, so since he was done, him and his brother Omni, they went to go help Jeremy find that buck the next morning. And I just went with Tim. And he said, let's go look. There's a 185 class buck right out of camp. Let's just go see if he's back there.
Okay.
Went up there, found him right off the bat, man. The same bull they've been finding him in. I took one look at him. I said, you guys are crazy, man. Y'all underjudged him a lot. I'm shooting him right now, and I killed him. 194, 4x4. Big buck, little drop time. Nice buck. And it's my biggest buck, and I would love to tell the story of that, but the bottom line is
there wasn't much of a
story. Found it. I went up there. I had to make a hell of a shot. 456 yards. Took me a couple of shots to get him. Wind was blowing, but I got him, and it was awesome. So we get my deer taken care of and back to camp, and we're texting Jeremy. He's like, stand down, don't come over here, don't do nothing. And we don't even know what's going on. 9 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, Jeremy, from 1,000 yards away, glasses that deer up, laying on the edge of a sage flat. And he'd get up and feed and lay back down, get up and lay back down, shot through the leg, right? Yeah. And so Jeremy being just, again, the ultimate, man, bow hunter and predator, he starts slinking in, and that sage is so high, he cannot get a vantage point to shoot the deer. He's only seeing pieces of the antlers,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
9 o'clock in the morning, he glasses him up. At 2:30 in the afternoon, he's 90 yards from him by stalking, and when the deer stood up one last time, ba-boom, dropped him. So he had, in camp, that picture you see on my Instagram, $3 laying there, like good old days, you know? Everybody's like, man, that's like the good old days. Yep, there's a 185, a 194, and a 225. In one picture, and we all killed them in a 12-hour span. Awesome. On public land.
Awesome.
Best story I can tell you, man. I can't come up with anything better than that right now.
No, that's awesome, man. That's hella good. Sweet. Well, are you doing a seminar today?
Right, at 12. What time is it now?
It's 10:35.
Oh, we're way good.
Yeah.
At 12:30, I do a seminar, mm-hmm. and typically I stay through till Sunday, but my wife didn't come this time, and she's my wingman, and I'm kind of just... Since she wasn't coming, I was like, I don't even want to be at the banquet without her. You know, right. I always dance with her and all that. It's Valentine's, so
yeah.
Yesterday. So I'm going to do my seminar at 12:30, and then I'm on a plane by 5:30 back to Texas. So
cool. Yeah, I brought my wife with me this time.
Good for you, man.
That's who's been texting me. She's probably rolling up in here now because I told her I'd meet her. Oh, there she is.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
Maria, this is Mark. Mark, Maria.
Hey, nice to meet you. All right.
So, well, cool, man. Thanks for being on. And
yeah, it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure with you, John. Yeah, man.
And we love having you on. We'll catch up with you before, like, and get you on.
I'm going to come hunt with you someday, man. We're going to go smack some coos deer or something. You've asked me before, and it just other things come up. So,
yeah, I come there on the rifle season.
Yeah, you know, I like that, man. Yeah. If I have a lot of time.
We'll let you work out that Weatherby.
You know I like those, man. Yeah, that's a great plan. I like it. Awesome.
All right, man. Cool. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcasts that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.